Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, our intrepid founder, who left us just 1 year ago on January 20th to take his place in the starting lineup of the Brooklyn Trolley Dodgers, better known as Them Bums, from the ghost of Ebbets Field, where I'm sure he's smiling down on us and shaking his head in dismay is what has happened this past week.
That's He'd Mike be laughing his head off.
Right, exactly. It's Tuesday, January 12th, 2021, in the new year of the traitorous Trump insurrection and the rampaging global COVID pandemic. With us this morning and all alone in the Jane Bosch studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon is our master of the virtual mix, Zoom modulating sound engineer, and steady hand on the stick as we fly through the show is Truman O'Brien.
Good morning. Good
morning. How are your Trumpster buddies? Are they ready to go to D.C. to stop the steal, or are they ready to buckle up their uniforms and defend the Constitution they once swore to uphold?
You know, it's been real quiet. I've had one guy make just a couple of small comments on Facebook, but I'll tell you what's interesting is that I have a couple of women friends down in the South, and boy, these folks are ready to get their guns out. I think they're really, really rabid. I'm surprised, but my army buddies are starting to mellow a little, I think.
Mm-hmm. You know, Truman, I have to say, I saw this morning on MSNBC News, Chuck Schumer going before, he was outside and he was trying to speak outside about the plans for this coming week. And a woman came up to him and really dressed him down and called him a coward. And, you know, they had to cut away for a while because she would not stop. And they wanted her to express her opinion. You know, she was peaceful, but boy, she was angry. You're right.
Yeah. Well, they're rabid.
Interesting.
I'm assuming angry because of his plans to go forward with impeachment, or angry because they think the election should be?
Oh, it was stolen. There's just no question. I mean, come on. Those darn dirty Democrats stole it.
Yeah, that was what she was shouting,
yeah,
Michael.
Yeah.
You know, they believe it.
Oh, they believe it wholeheartedly. Yep.
So that was the voice of our intrepid traveler from the land of magnolias, who now is staying secure in her home here on the island of Madronas, the analytic academic social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie debutantes, Lynn Kerrigan.
Hi, good morning, Bruce. Good to see you.
So what have you been stirring in your pot in tranquil Ellisport?
Well, this morning I've been trying to get around on a bum knee. I managed to take a pretty bad fall in today's dark, dark, rainy weather when I went out to get my newspaper, and then found that I forgot that my neighbor had parked his whole RV rig while he's having a carport rebuild, and I just went down on a piece of railroad tie. My knee looks like a football now, but it's good to have something to distract me, because otherwise I've been busy writing letters to the editor, which you will see in the Beachcomber tomorrow. I've been so frothing at the mouth, I have to do something with all that.
So you're another one of those rabid women, huh? There we go. See, there you are.
What did they say about not scorning, not getting in the way of a woman scorned?
That's it.
For sure.
Hell hath no fury.
That's it.
Yes.
So we don't even have to be right. As long as we're scorned, that's all that matters.
That's right. But you usually are, Clint. At least you are. I mean, come on.
I don't know about that. My judgment is impaired today, apparently.
So visible to us all on our Zoom screens this morning is the erudite editor of Indivisible Vashon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, what is Indivisible Vashon planning to do to celebrate the January 20th inauguration of President Biden and Vice President Harris, except for bringing your rifles?
Well, you know, what we serendipitously, our monthly meeting of Indivisible Vashon just happens to land on Inauguration Day. And believe me, that was not planned, but we were really happy to see that that's the outcome. So we're planning to meet virtually at 7 o'clock that night and look back at the 4 years of work to bring that we've worked on to bring us to this moment, celebrate Georgia. And also midday, there's talk of a car parade on Vashon. So keep your eyes peeled on Facebook and the Beachcomber and other information sources to get the latest on that. That would be at midday somewhere on Vashon.
Fantastic. All right. So sort of a 4th of July parade redo, right?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
And our focus is the celebration. We hope that our focus will be the celebration of our democracy's persistence and ability to move through different administrations, hopefully peacefully, despite what happened this last week.
Well, we'll see on January 20th for sure. Mm-hmm. So back for a few months now from her nearly year-long sojourn in the San Juan Islands is futurist, writer, dreamcatcher, and peripatetic poet Gail Kellner. Gail, do you have any soothing words of poetry for us during these turbulent times? The muse soothes the raging sea, right?
I'm at a loss for words. Poets tend, there are such things as political poetry, and I've written some as well as read some in my time, but I have to say, I think the great gift of any poet, and not just myself, but the poets among us here today on the Briefly, Lynn and others, is that we hopefully are able to take the long view, not unlike a historian in some ways. You know, poetry is a lot about stepping back. And honestly, I have not been able to step back far enough. listening and watching the events of the last few weeks unfold have left me at a loss for words so far. I'm going to have to ruminate a while longer on this one. Maybe next week.
Well, looking forward to it, you know, and that kind of reflection that poetry brings to us is needed in times like this, for sure.
Art in all forms is really helpful, actually, in times like this. Something for our listener to remember, you know, that, and all of us, that's a form of expression that is peaceful, nonviolent, and soothing to the soul. So whatever that may be for each of us, I encourage people to access that as a way to process and get through these times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lynn.
Amen, Gail. I just want to thank you for that. I feel calmer already. You know, somebody defined to me, there's many definitions of what poetry is and why it works so deeply on us. Mm-hmm. And the one I like best is that a good poem is as if you were being overheard in a prayer to God. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it gets elemental and really deep if you can. And the only word that has been coming to me this last couple of weeks has been mercy. Mercy. I go out in nature and I see the trees still standing and I see the rain still falling, and you know, it feels like weeping to me, and I just beg for mercy. And that's the only word I can come up with.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, along those lines, I was out for a walk around the Dilworth Loop with my friend Michael Monteleone, and we passed this sort of gushing sort of hillside, along one of the roads where, the rainwater and the spring water was just sort of gushing into the ditch and then running down and into a ravine and down to the Sound. And both Michael and I looked at each other and just said, that water just doesn't give a damn about what's going on right now. It's going to be running, it's been running since the glaciers left, and it's going to be running until the next glaciers come. And it's always good to have that sort of perspective, to be able to step back and to ground yourself in nature. So yeah, both Lynn and Gail, you bring an important voice of reason to this.
And so does Michael Shook, who is not introduced yet, but who spends his life with his hands in the dirt. And yep. I would say Michael is one of the most grounded people I know.
And that gives a good opportunity to round out the briefly with that plain-spoken Brooklyn Dodger fan, actor, singer, gardener, half a bubble shy of plum carpenter Michael Shook. Michael, what is your communion with your plants during these deliciously wet days have to tell us about the future of our democracy?
Well, it kind of echoes what Gail and Lynn and you were speaking about. Quote the Chauncey Gardner, as long as the roots are not severed, the garden will be well. All is well in the garden. And there will be growth. So it's a kind of a goofy thing. And if you've ever seen that movie, you know how much I love it what a great character that is. But I think it's true. I think my hope is that we're going to see on the 20th and beyond. And I think we're seeing from the response of many, many Americans across the country and people in other countries as well, saying, we will endure. And we've been through worse, just need to do the work to keep ourselves on a better track.
Well, and we all hope that the roots of democracy here are deeper than they are shallow, and that they will hold, and that, despite the tuggings on the plant of democracy, it will not be uprooted and it will not die here in the United States.
We get some branches broken from time to time, pretty badly, but sometimes that stimulates new growth in a plant. So,
well, if you know about the cottonwoods, they have a very, very deep taproot and a very strong trunk. And those babies, they last. And I think we will as well.
Well, and to say that even the protesters, even perhaps the rioters, I can give them this credit. They think they're defending democracy. This is one of the sort of such a difficult thing to wrap our minds around, but they are actually not in disagreement with us here. They just they're working from a different set of information, and that has caused that's the actual underlying problem, I think. Yeah, Kevin.
To that point, I took the rare opportunity to listen to a Sean Hannity show last night. And if you heard what the president said before hopping on the helicopter to then fly to Texas today, he said that, his words, of course, were perfect, and that there's all of these other people who were Democrats who said much worse things and in terms of, inciting violence in the country. And that is exactly what Hannity showed last night, is a clip of people who were basically like Kamala Harris saying, the people in this country who've been suppressed for generations have been fighting back against that, and they should continue that fight. So they're basically, lifting Hannity's words out of the Fox News right-wing media bubble and distorting it because of basically conflating people's fighting for their rights in this country against the notion of, inciting a mob to basically be seditious against the processes of our government. And it is an amazing thing to have seen the hand-in-glove handoff there, but that is what's happening.
Very disturbing. Lynn.
I think it's really important that you're calling out what are basically false equivalencies and the defensive deflection tactics that Republicans have been using to support their own narrative. I think that we're in some deep trouble here with people calling basically for civil war. That is what's coming out of their mouths, because they feel that the information they have been given is inadequate for them to believe that the election was fair and proper. And I find that circular logic really dismaying, because they're staying with one source of news as opposed to seeking news out from a variety of sources that are known to be evidence-based and fact-based. And so they're trapped in a logical dissonance that is really sad for me. And everyone is hurting. And some people, I think, just don't know how to get out of that hole that they've dug for themselves.
Well, and when you don't have a common acknowledgement of what is real and what is true and what are facts and what are not facts, then it becomes this ultimate postmodern nightmare of everybody's own reality is as valid as everybody else's reality. And that's the difficulty we're dealing with right now.
Michael, I thought you had a comment.
It was a different one from that, but that makes me think of the whole postmodernist slant where almost saying that, and in some cases saying that objective reality doesn't exist. And I think that there's, like with everything, there's a kernel of truth in that. We all have our unique subjective viewpoints on everything, and all the things that we experience are filtered through our bodies and then translated by our minds. And there's a lot that can get, I don't want to say distorted, but
yeah.
My experience of life and of plants and of rain and of breathing, of everything is unique to me. But I do think objective reality does exist. Trees, I mean, if that tree falls on me while I'm out there walking, that's an objective reality that's going to hit home pretty hard. I'm probably going to be dead.
If no one hears it, Michael.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. What if nobody's there to see
what
it?
What if I hear it?
You won't hear it long.
I hope I hear it before then.
It's the dilemma. Yeah. It's the dilemma of Schrodinger's cat. You know, that's the difficulty I think we can find. Yeah. You know.
But I love what William James, you know, I said this many times on the show, you know, at some moment, these various views of things come together in the physical reality of our lives. And, you know, the real thing that happened is there and can't be hustled off to the side or denied.
Mm-hmm. Kevin.
Yeah. And in this case, there's a couple of points I'd like to make. You know, we have this platform where we have an opportunity to convey our belief systems and to raise awareness. So we're using it, which is a really good thing. And it's a good thing for our democracy. We know that the telling of the big lie is a historically effective way to disrupt societies and to disrupt democracies. We know that this election was stated by the person in charge of cybersecurity to be the safest and most secure that we've had. We know that dozens of lawsuits against fraud in this election were turned away by judges who were both appointed by conservatives and liberals. We know that this is a big lie. There's plenty of evidence for that. And while people like Truman, you mentioned a couple of friends of yours who are ready to take up arms. The watchword that I understand is we do not need to denigrate them. They are already suffering from whatever malady puts them in the place where they're willing to believe the big lie. We need to recognize that we need to share with them our views in a polite way to let them know that there are different realities there, right, that people can see. So I would urge our listeners to take that opportunity, if they know people who are succumbing to this, to let them know that maybe your point of view is different and that you have some pretty good basis for your views. Mm-hmm. And it's best for us to get along here and do so in a peaceable way as we resolve all of these things that have happened over the course of the last week. So I'll get off my soapbox now.
Oh, that was good, Kevin.
That was good. Well, I think you did a fine job kind of talking about the logic here. And I think what I would just add to what you said, Kevin, is for me, I look in times of confusion to principles that underlie my decision making. And, you know, I just think one of the objective realities is the Constitution and our written will of law, which you may or may not agree with at all points in time. But nonetheless, it's the law and we're expected to abide by it. And I just hope that we can come up with some way to impress upon Republicans and their supporters that this has been a bridge too far recently. This is a direct attack on our Constitution and our principles of governing and principles of the law, and it cannot stand.
Michael, it's interesting with the thought that just occurred to me about the law and the Constitution and things like that. And I look back on my days, the last few years, a couple of years I was in high school and then in the immediate aftermath of that, and the Vietnam War was still raging. And it's interesting because the tactics in many ways are the same. We're seeing people this time on the far right using chaos, using rhetorical invective and lies. We're seeing bombings, attempted bombings, massive demonstrations. Well, maybe not massive, but concentrated demonstrations that become violent. I guess I should say it that way, because they're not thousands and thousands and thousands of people marching in the streets. But it's funny to me because it's kind of like the shoes on the other foot. I think of my father, and he was disturbed very much by the way that the demonstrations were going, and concerned about the country, that it was being torn apart mm-hmm. by a lot of violent demonstrations, blowing up the ROTC building on the University of Washington exactly. campus.
Well, at that time, I would just add, Michael, I lived through that too. And at that time, we felt that our leaders were lying to us. And we felt that our leaders were putting our troops in harm's way. Yeah. And I demonstrated personally, you know, probably half my time during those years when I was in sure. social work school and was sure. shouting a lot, trying to get people to see that the youth of the country at that time did not want to go forward on the basis of lies into another country that just did nothing but kill all our boys. So, you know, for me, I feel like the principles that we were fighting for at the time are almost exactly the same as what we're fighting for now, or what I feel like I'm preaching for, which mm-hmm. is, you know, some truth, for heaven's sake, and some leadership that does not get us in trouble.
The folks on the other side would say exactly what you said.
And yeah, maybe.
There's that that wonderful thing where they're at our, not to get too religious, but our priest at our last Sunday, we read the prayer that's attributed to St. Francis. And we read it early in the service and then toward the end of the service. And it has that wonderful line in there, "Let me seek not to be understood, but to understand." And I think what that goes to what you were talking about, Kevin, is that when people respond so fiercely the way that this minority, I think, of Americans is responding, I think they're really afraid. And I think so they want someone to hear them, they want to be understood. It doesn't mean we condone their actions. It doesn't mean we sit by and let the president run roughshod over the Constitution. It doesn't mean any of those things. We still abide by the rule of law. But I think I liked what you said, because somehow the two sides have got to find a way to come together and hear each other and establish a relationship, because without a relationship, we'll never, nothing happens. Just more conflict. Yep. That's my thought.
I agree.
And our relationship denotes some kind of equality. And what's interesting about what Lynn said is that the protests of the Vietnam War were about being lied to, and the Pentagon Papers indeed verified that the government was lying about Vietnam. Yeah. It's going to be interesting, and as a historian sort of thinking about how the future is going to look back at this, these folks are being lied to, but the lie is not in the facts. The lie is in the creation of the big lie. Because you've got Republican, administrators of elections all through this country who have no interest in Democrats winning, and yet who are true to their charter and to their job and to their responsibility, and saying, hey, the votes are the votes. We've got the facts. Georgia, we counted three times. We came up with, 0.001% of disagreement between the three counts. So, that's getting back to that sense of what is real, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And sort of as a historian, for me, trying to keep that long-range view and looking at what's going on right now, and reminding folks that the wheels of justice may grind slowly, but they do grind. And so what's going to be the outcome of this? What's going to be the fact that this sort of attempted coup that invaded the United States Capitol, that sought to kill members of the House and Senate, that chanted to hang Vice President Trump Pence, that set up a guillotine sort of, or a scaffold outside of the Capitol building with a hangman's noose, killed a Capitol police officer. What's the proper response for us as American patriots to that? Silence.
No, I'm just trying not to burst.
Silence.
I want Trump and his minions frog marched into jail. How about that? That's my response.
I was thinking very much about the 14th Amendment and that may be our best answer. I think the vote will be to impeach Trump a second time. If I was my futurist as of thinking as far out as tomorrow, the vote probably will be to impeach him. I think that it will, I don't know about going through the Senate, and especially after the election or after Biden is seated. But I do very much like this idea of the 14th Amendment. There was after the Civil War, the need to keep people who were still in the mind of not setting down their arms, or at least not their agenda, after the Civil War. And so if you were involved in insurrection, you could no longer hold public office. And I think that, Bruce, or those of you?
Section three,
yeah, of 14th. The 14th Amendment is, I think, an excellent tool for a response come February or thereabouts. And it should be applied not only to Trump, but to anyone who was part of that.
Truman, I'm curious if I can call on you about, your perspective on what you feel would be an adequate both accountability for Trump and a measure that might not send everybody into further division and hysterics, if we can find that.
Yeah. I'm afraid that my opinion is that frog march sounds really good to me. I don't have any time for these folks. You can demonstrate all you want, but the destruction and the what they did is way, way beyond the pale. In fact, the comment I made, that one photograph where the guys have the door barricaded and they're all got their guns drawn there, what I said to that one was the only reason for not firing is that their guns misfired, in my mind. They should have shot every darn one of them trying to break in there. I just don't have any time for it. I'm not a big demonstration guy anyway.
That you say that, and that people, you know, who are from the right are not all painted with this brush of, you know, they're all extremist and insurrectionist, because right. I'm sure there are a lot more people like you, Truman, who can be, you know, leaning right, up right wing, and yet don't support absolute destruction and insurrection inside the Capitol.
That's beyond the pale. And you know, I had the problem, the same problem with the Vietnam War protest. I felt the same way. Of course, now I had a little bit different perspective on that, having been there and reading in the Stars and Stripes about protest in the States. We were all like, what are they doing? You know, I mean, this is us over here, man. You know, you got to support us, not be down on the individual soldiers, which they were when we got back, and it was horrible. Yeah. But yeah, Kevin.
Well, Truman, I'm wondering what your thoughts are about the leadership.
Which, our current or our coming?
The notion that there's evidence that our leadership, our president, incited people to take the actions, which you just said you
In number
what
one.
About, what about them? What do you think is fair reaction to their work?
I don't think we've had leadership for the last 4 years, if you want to know my opinion. I think it's been a joke. This inciting the riot, boy, I mean, Giuliani and Trump both. They should be in cuffs, man. There's just no excuse for that. None.
I wanted to also add, thank you for that. I also wanted to add my view. I think of risk management and how do we get out of the mess we're in, and the fact that if we exit this opportunity and not change fundamentally how we react to it, we invite it again. Right now, without the ability to hold the president accountable to be indicted, it's a perfect place for organized crime boss.
You bet.
And how many resources do they have to get there? We have to take a position that while we may choose to continue to not indict our sitting president, to allow them to pardon themselves, to be held above the law, is something that just invites a disruption. I mean, against what a democracy is about that we're trying to create. The other thing I want to say is that I think it's important that people who've shown the attributes that our president has should no longer hold office.
Absolutely.
My fear is that in pressing for that, it will create further division. It may create violence. It's maybe likely to create violence. And we have to weigh the consequence of that. But the idea of stepping back from our values, of stepping back from abiding by the rule of law, because we're concerned about a near-term effect of inciting possible future violence, and accepting the long-term degradation of our democratic system to not hold people to account, in my mind, I think we have to take that trade. I think we have to press forward and hold accountability and do so with respect and consistency with our system. But I don't think we can let this go by.
Yeah. No, Lynn, you've been dying to say something.
I just wanted to say, Kevin, that you couldn't have said it better. I think that I fully agree with you. And what I will add is that as a mental health person, I just want to say how dangerously deranged I believe Trump to be, and that he cannot learn about the public interest. He has no interest in it. I believe that he is either criminal or delusional or both, and that he is very unfit for office. We have watched him abandon his presidential duties and go after a fraudulent attempt to overthrow a legal election. I don't believe he's rational or stable. And so these are very unusual times where somebody is not amenable to any reasoning or compromise. And I personally am concerned about what he could even do in the next 5 days. He is not a stable, rational person. So I just want to emphasize he can be more dangerous than he already has been.
The one thing I wanted to point out was, I want to point out one thing here, and that is what I appreciate is the New York Bar Association looking at disbarring Giuliani, and the airline saying, "Hey, you're gonna be a domestic terrorist. You're not riding on us." I mean, thank you, Alaska Airlines, for banning these 14 people. I mean, that's my old alma mater. You know, I mean, that's what we have to do. The people have to stand up and say, "Hey, you can't do that. That's not part of society. You know, that's not how we work." And the fact that Twitter and Facebook cut those guys off, those are private companies, and people are saying, "Oh, that's, you know, their First Amendment rights." They pointed out, "Hey, Trump, all he has to do is walk into the press room. He's got the full, you know, I mean, he can address the world right there. I mean, there's no, I mean, that's BS to say that he's they're cutting down back his First Amendment rights. That's ridiculous."
That's right.
Sorry, Gail, go ahead.
And I wanted to weigh in that I believe too it's a short-term or long-term trade-off. So we could have more, perhaps a peace a little quicker, more comfortable to have Biden come in and let's just move on. But I think the long-term effect is very dangerous. This entire thing needs to be cut off at the base. And and then I just to add to what you were saying, Truman, here's a short list of the companies that have either pulled their money from Congress and senators that voted to not recognize the validity of the elections. Marriott, Dow, Shopify, Hallmark, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Citigroup, Microsoft, Bank of America, FedEx, Wells Fargo. And that I find both heartening and deeply disturbing because it tells you who actually runs the country. Oh, yeah. These guys, they're the ones when they pull the money. That's when shit starts to happen. Excuse my language. I don't know if I can say that on the air.
You can't, but that's okay.
You just slurred it.
That's as my friend used to say when we were back in junior high, them that has the golden rule prevails. Them that has the gold makes the rules.
That's right.
But I wanted to come back and just hearing everyone talk about that and reiterate that when I talked about understanding and reconciling and things like that, I want to emphasize that I am in complete concord. We must prosecute these people to the fullest extent of the law, and all those that can be apprehended who took part in that insurrection. My thinking when I first talked about that was more on a local level, like on a state level. And I've actually been thinking, geez, my sister and brother-in-law live over east of the mountains on a farm over there in Okanagan County. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a way that we can talk to folks, you know, who this side of the mountains and that side of the mountains. And so I get together a little more. I think there's a lot of people that would benefit from that, but on a more local level. That's all.
Can I just add one more quick thing, which has to do with Michael? I fully agree that we can solve things people to people sometimes and locally a lot quicker and easier than we can the big VIPs, you know, in the Beltway. But the thing that I just wanted to add to my comments and to this conversation is that, you know, Trump is one man. I personally blame the Republican leadership in the Senate for refusing to corral him and rein him in. And now there are other members of the Republicans who are like Cruz and Hawley acting out, talking about the validity of this type of response and continuing it. And I just think that the leadership conversation we're having really needs to extend to the party in control of the House, and that we've talked many times about absolute power corrupting absolutely. But I just, there's, to me, there's no excuse for this Senate not backing the people, saying that this is a bridge too far and attacking this Capitol. I just don't get it. Kevin.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to amplify one thing that Gail said about corporations removing their funding. They're using their platform too.
Yes.
Their platform, just like we are. Michael, I agree that people who are misled, we'll see when my letter to the Beachcomber gets published. People have been misled in a sad way. It's disturbing. It's frightening. But it's also really sad that that the human condition is such that people will follow guidance which is not good, and particularly from people in power who they have been trained to respect. And it's it's quite unfortunate what's happened. In terms of working across boundaries, I was just on a call. We have a network across the state of indivisible groups and people from Southwest Washington, Eastern Washington, talking about how we can have conversations, how we can strengthen communities. The 350 Climate Organization has brought people together, 13 groups across the state, to work together collaboratively. So, we have these opportunities. The beauty of this platform we're on right now with Zoom is that you can work globally without ever having to leave Vashon Island. So there are opportunities for those conversations. And I'm really inspired that people are engaging in that. And I think it will make a difference.
That's great.
The one thing that, Lynn, that you said months ago was the critical thinking, the importance of teaching and for all of us to practice that particular process. Where you're looking at and questioning everything. You're looking at all the sources of information that you can get. And that's one thing that I know that some of my buddies are not. They have their blinders on and they are not looking at anything. It's communism, it's socialism, and it's bad. And I don't care what you guys are doing, it's bad. You guys, they can't see anything but that.
To me, this is a challenge of democracy.
How do you get by that?
Cut your finger right on it, which is there's competing interests and competing views and competing needs. And yet, if we can learn to think together reasonably about our assumptions, about our opinions versus facts, we can eventually get to better truths for more people. And I just encourage us to stay engaged, as Kevin said, with the idea of democracy, and we'll get through this.
Gail.
I'd like to say that I believe it is the responsibility and unfortunately the failure, not due to any teacher's fault or in particular or anything, but just the failure of proper funding for public education. This is among the results of pulling funding and not properly giving students the skills that they need, not only for to learn the basics of civics, but to learn how to discern truth from untruth, how to think critically, which is something that I hope going forward.
Well, with any luck, Carrillo DeVos is now resigned, so that's a start.
Well, and we're drawing close to our end, Truman, I think. So, it just takes me back to Lincoln's first inaugural address, when he talks about the need to sort of reach across our divisions, to reach across the sort of things that divide us, and to realize that there are more things that draw us together and hold us together than that separate us. And what it takes is that sort of sense of understanding and that sense of affection, that we're all Americans. We may have different opinions, we may have different points of view, but there are more things that hold us together than that divide us. And unless we can sort of build on that, we're gonna be in for a rough few years in the future.
Completely agree. Okay, guys, see you all next week. Great show.
If there is a next week.